What's going on, everybody? Welcome to our downtown studios. This is Five Rounds Today. I am John Ramdean. He is Robin Black. And, you know, you think that the goal is to talk about this UFC on Fox card that's happening this coming Saturday at the United Center in Chicago. Holly Holm taking on Valentina Shevchenko. But there's just so much to talk about in the world of MMA. We're coming off that incredible Bellator card. Bellator normally went down on Friday. It went down on Saturday night. You got to see kind of a new star emerge. If you follow the Bellator organization, or if you're a real fight fan, you know who Michael Page is. But the knockout that he ended up getting over Cyborg Santos went viral. The whole Pokemon thing at the end. Brock Lesnar failing his drug test.
There's a lot going on.
So a lot of things. What to you? I know what's the most important. Looking at the fights and thinking about the strategy and mental strength and trying to figure out what is going to happen. The controlled chaos inside of the cage. But as we know, these are other elements, because you and I tend to get snitty about some of the other elements of the game.
Sure.
But these are all elements. The reason why people are interested in Brock Lesnar is they want controversy. You got some people out there that say, I told you, I knew that guy was juicing all along. So you're creating interest. So what is the biggest story for you?
That's interesting.
Robbie Lawler's fighting in a couple of weeks, too.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Now, one thing you got to touch on is this is Thursday and Friday.
Yes.
But this isn't for us.
Yeah, not for us.
I'm going to the cottage, so we're taping this earlier. And that's one of the truths of doing a podcast or a TV show or something. No, no. You and the nature of television is you make a TV show. Now, we're making this earlier. So I'm only saying that because stuff we could talk about in this show might actually change by the time the show airs. And if it does, who cares?
Who cares?
That's just how it is.
We're giving our 2 cents.
That's right. So you mentioned Lesnar. One thing that I find fascinating, and I talked to Chael Sonnen about this, who obviously is an expert in these fields, controversy is not, let's not even talk about fighting. Let's just talk about fighting as a thing that we enjoy. So you might, someone else might, if you're watching this, you also watch fight. You also enjoy fighting.
Yes.
This would be a crazy thing to be watching if you were, like, really into, like, rock climbing.
Yeah.
But whatever thing you're into, music, video games, sports of any kind, even politics, controversy is necessary. And people
is it, or do we just accept it?
Well, no, it's necessary because currently, right now, there is, 100 million pieces of information being shared. And we're going to ignore 99.8 million of them. Or 99.99 million of them. And the ones that are going to cut through all that noise. What's going on? He failed the drug test?
He said what?
When John Jones got dinged for failing his drug test, phones ring off the hook. You or I or Pollock or anybody who works in our field, we're not getting phone calls from mainstream television and radio shows asking us about UFC 200. The second it comes out that Jones is dinged for steroids, I did 13 things that day. 13, 14 things. Pollock was on some talk show about money or about politics or something. Everybody wanted to talk about it. And so the idea that
I was on nothing.
Yeah. Well, that's because you stay off social media, and that's very smart of you, I must add. The idea, people used to say there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah.
And I think that might have not been true at one time or been less true. Now it's 100% true because you will get zero publicity most of the time for whatever it is. You're trying to sell a glove. You're trying to sell soup. You're trying to get people to watch your thing about fighting. You're trying to get people to watch Bellator. Whatever it is, you need some reason to cut through the 100 million pieces of information. And often it's controversy. Chael does it on purpose. Chael just goes out and says crazy things because he knows that if he doesn't, his employer, ESPN, will not get the attention of other people.
Yeah, I know. It's true. I was having this conversation with my daughter this weekend about how we were watching something. She's saying, well, this only has 7 unlikes. And again, I don't really think about these things, but it was something you were talking about, how it's all the same.
It is all the same.
It is all the same, whether it's dislike, you like, everybody's tuning in. And I tried to explain that to her, and she's like, I think it took her a second because it's like, well, you want the positive. Because, you know, as a little kid, it's all about positive not negativity. Sure. But once she realized that it's like, oh, yeah, it's just people consuming your stuff. Yeah. It's irrelevant. And that's what it is right now. It's like, who can make the biggest boom by saying something? It's like, because I think we live in such a – I don't know if I can say the word ADD. But we live in an ADD world where it's like, let's get on to the next thing. Great, that happened. Let's move on to the next person that drops an F-bomb or calls a bunch of kids some obscene words or Donald Cerrone dropping a homophobic slur.
Yeah, right. Even – now, there is a point you would think if somebody says something homophobic – or racist, or like the worst things that people do. We see athletes do that kind of stuff all the time. They lose track of stuff. This sounds terrible, but whether you're Chick-fil-A, the restaurant, or whether you're Donald Cerrone, there are people that agree with bad ideas. There are people that agree with terrible things that people say. Those people suddenly go, oh, there's my guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's scary, but it's a scary reality that we're in. So back to the original thing, Brock Lesnar, he understands this probably more than anyone because he doesn't care what anybody
thinks. I know.
He doesn't care not the slightest bit what anyone thinks. But your likes and dislikes, the UFC digital guy and our digital guy here was talking about it. And he's like, you know, if you have 500 likes on something, that's cool. But if you have 500 likes and 300 dislikes and thousands of comments arguing about it, that's what people
are
after.
Want.
That's and Brock Lesnar understands that. And the UFC understands that. And we are the puppets. When we get angry, I mean, some of us are just angry. So how are you going to engage the angry part of the audience if you don't give them something to be angry about?
Right.
You know, if it's only something that people like, you've lost a whole segment of our society who are angry a lot of the time and they get fired up. I hate that Brock Lesnar. That John Jones is just the worst. Robin Black's breakdowns are just so stupid. Like, whatever it is, you need those people. Yeah. Also, they engage each other.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar's the greatest. that's engagement. Chael understands that better than almost anybody out there.
But it almost seems that there's a line where it's sometimes difficult to take somebody seriously if, you know, something happens and Chael Sonnen is just so far out in left field. It's like, what in the world is this guy talking about?
But then in 6 weeks, he's going to say something smart and we'll be thinking about that thing. Yeah. And he gets that. John Anik is, in my opinion, is killing it.
Yeah, he is.
I think he's really doing a great job. I think he's getting better all the time.
I agree.
And I was speaking to him when we were in Ottawa, and I chatted with him a little bit after. And he probably doesn't pay attention to this, but I don't know if – I think it's gone now. But early on, fans were like, I hate that guy because change is bad.
Because we were used to Goldberg.
Exactly.
Goldberg was the guy for the better part of a decade.
Yeah. Well – if you still want to stick with that Anik, you don't like Anik, you can, but he's very good.
He is good.
We're broadcasters.
Yeah.
This is what we do. This is what we do. And we look at that guy, and when he works with Brian Stanwell,
Top-notch. Those
guys are killing it.
Yeah.
And I wonder if he ever cared that that was out there, or if he understood that that was great. That, like, if some people are angry, other people will come to his defense and it'll all light up. But that guy's killing it. And him and Brian stand together. I really enjoy the broadcast when those guys are working.
I agree 100%. Yeah. Speaking of which, because they're obviously the team of Stan and Anik, they're a success. What wasn't a success is this past Fight Night show, Michael McDonald, John Lineker, one of the lowest rated UFC shows in recent memory. And why do you think that was? Do you think it's because we were just bombarded with so much fighting? You had Eddie Alvarez, you had Joanna and Jacek, you had the Brock Lesnar show, the Anderson Silva return, you have Amanda Nunes winning the title. And I was like, wait a second, who's fighting? And it's not on a Saturday?
Yeah.
What is this? Is already happening again? Great fights.
I bet you in South Dakota, that was a lot of guys, Tony Ferguson, a lot of them were talking about how great that is. I'm from Winnipeg, same part of the northern, southern part of the same. We're all the same there. And I know how crazy in Winnipeg we'd have gone and how crazy Winnipeg has gone for the UFC. And newer markets, people just like
go bananas.
Ravenous fans that have waited, could have gone to a fight, and they just can't even believe it's in their home city. So that, I'm sure, was a success in that way. But I think if we're looking at how and why people watch fighting, And it's an interesting question. It really is, because the deeper you watch it, and a lot of the people who watch our show and the people we talk to are fanatics.
Yeah.
It's where the word fan came from, is fanatic, but they're fanatics. And when you're a fanatic, you start to see fighting as storytelling. You start to see it as athletic achievement. You start to see it as battles of heart and will, and you start to see it as technique and elegant technique and skill, and you see it in all these different ways. And I think some of the people that you bring in to watch UFC 200 and you get all pumped up for the week, some of them see it that way, and others are just like, that's enough violence for me.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen enough violence.
I think you kind of nailed it perfectly, because we got to be here. We were watching UFC. We shot our preview show. You actually had a party that you went to.
Yeah.
And I was here watching with a whole bunch of different people in Fight Network offices. And you're having all these different conversations with people that watch for a different reason. There's some people that are watching because I gamble on this stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm so you see this, their stress level when they're consuming this stuff, because like, okay, I don't bet on this. So I'm trying to understand, well, I parlayed this and this, and I need this to go over this round. Yeah. And then you watch them and it doesn't look like they're enjoying this.
I know.
They're sweating and their face is red. And then you talk to others. It's like, this guy, he got a knockout in this fight and this fight and this. And this guy's never knocked out anybody. Yeah. It's like, okay, so some people will use MMA math, the thing.
Yeah.
Some people just, I don't know. I just like seeing people punch each other in the face.
And
I don't know who anybody is.
All of those things are valid.
Yeah.
They really are.
I watch you watch a fight and you're moving your head and you're looking, your brain's being processing what's going on. So, and you're looking at it from a martial arts standpoint. There's so many reasons why people tune into mixed martial arts. Chase giving us the wrap sign. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about why people love watching fighting here on Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you, chatting about everything that's going on in the world of MMA. Bellator 158 went down on Saturday night. Brock Lesnar failed something or other.
By the time this airs, he might have failed a B sample. But one thing we did know at the time of this chat is that he passed like 7 tests and failed one of them.
Yeah.
But
there's
a lot of reasons that
Now, what are some of the reasons?
Microdosing.
And for people that are unfamiliar with that term, is it just you're taking tiny, tiny doses over a long period of time?
Yeah, essentially. I don't know.
That's a lot of work, it seems.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what any of the protocol would be to beat USADA now. But some of these guys, the level, like anything, there's fighters that push forward and they pressure. So you got to figure out how to solve that. And then you move a lot.
Yeah.
And then guys who love pressure will solve that. Oh, okay, we'll use certain footwork to trap these guys, and then we'll strike them against the fence and whatever. I mean, Lineker, I'm meandering. My point was going to be that you can always find the next thing finds an answer to the thing that beats it, and testing is the same way.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man, these guys can test. Well, okay, we'll beat it.
You're my coach.
Yeah.
We're not saying that Brock Lesnar did this, but we're saying we got to look at all the different possibilities. You're my juice guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to you, and I'm like, okay, this is what I need to do. I need to be on this stuff.
Yeah.
I've been out of this game for so long. Hook me up. Tell me what I need to do. What is the process to because these guys are going to knock on my door anytime.
Yeah. It's a complex thing. Like, when you look into it, and there's a couple guys on the web who will talk. They're experts.
Yeah, right.
And they'll sit down, and it's like this. They take this, and then they take
this. It's a science 100. Experiment, what you said. You do this, and then you have to do these things. And then you got to make sure you got to take this.
Exactly.
And then while this thing goes down, you got to make sure that's like – that's – but, however, if you have millions and millions of dollars, and you live in the woods, and USADA shows up, it's like, I don't know. He's out hunting.
Yeah.
You're more than welcome to go into the woods and try to find him.
Now – I'm not saying that Dwayne Johnson is on steroids.
Yeah, you're not
but
saying
Dwayne that Johnson's on steroids. You know what I mean? Like, the interesting part about when you remove testing. So the experiment and the arms race, if a Brock Lesnar or a John Jones or anybody who's been accused, the arms race is to use that science experiment to beat the test. So the test's coming in. Yeah. We got to make sure that at certain points you're like this. You're only hot for like an hour, which is probably how or why a guy would get caught once out of eight tests. But the thing with Dwayne Johnson or someone like that, and I'm not saying Dwayne Johnson's on steroids, but I'm kind of saying the thing with a guy like that
we're
is –
we're not hating.
No. I love Dwayne
Johnson. We love The Rock. We love The Rock.
Totally. He's an entertainer.
Yeah,
he's a great actor.
Yeah.
And I mean that. There's been moments where you're like, this guy can act.
Ballers.
He's a physical entertainer. I would have loved to see The Rock fight.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But the arms race there, the science experiment is – well, we don't test. I mean, what is like a studio going to test you? Nobody's going to test you.
No. We want to make millions and millions of dollars. You look like the biggest freak you can look like.
So if Dwayne Johnson is on steroids without testing, the science experiment is just like, how can we make you the biggest we can while maintaining your health? So that becomes the up and down. We add testing to it, biggest and strongest you can, and maintaining your health and passing a test. That extra variable or series of variables is so unbelievably confusing that there are guys getting up at midnight with an alarm set to take a drug.
Right.
Then in the morning or every 4 hours take micro doses of something and one thing once a week and two pills later in the day and the pills that then overcompensate for that thing. And sometimes that stuff that makes your hair not go bald to trick your system and like it's nuts. So which is why there's going to be less and less and less and less and less and less guys using drugs because they just won't be able to.
Juggling
there's so many spinning plates at one time that you screw up one of them or a guy shows up and tests you at 3 a.m. when you thought 3 a.m. was a safe time. So for a lot of these guys that are still getting caught and actually did it, I don't know why I said that because most of them actually did it. Even Tim Means, they were like, well, this thing was in one of the supplements he took. That it means quite possibly he actually took this supplement and it was weird. It was in there. It also might mean that some strength specialist that he knows that you can take this drug and, hey, this supplement happens to have it. So you ever get caught, just say
just
blame
this.
Well,
because what we're hearing now, and again, I haven't heard this, but one of the guys in the pit said that Brock Lesnar's training partner said that they were training and there was some sort of they're up in the mountains and he had some sort of asthma thing and he took a puffer.
By the time this airs, that may have come out or not come out. If it does come out.
It's like the kangaroo meat thing.
Yeah, but if what he was dinged with for USADA was a stimulant.
Yeah.
In most cases, that is a stimulant.
Sure. And if it is?
If it is, and he got caught 4 weeks out from a fight taking a stimulant, he wouldn't have been taking that for performance.
Yeah.
That is something that works for a very limited amount of time, and most athletes wouldn't take it because you're not going to be taking it on the night. So if it turns out to be a stimulant, I buy that.
Okay.
That's about the only thing that because the logic is so thick on that. But it's more like, I mean, it's very likely something else, you know? I mean.
And again, we talk about it. We're looking ahead to the show in Chicago, the co-main event, Gilbert Melendez making his return, and he said the same thing. So I took it supplement. It was my responsibility. But the fact is, these people can all rely on that. Everybody says, hey, you're still going to get suspended, but it's better than saying, you know what, I knowingly took this stuff. And
Chael
then you're labeled as a cheater, right?
Chael said that, and that guy is a broadcaster for ESPN.
True.
He's very wealthy.
Yeah, that's
he owns
true.
A grappling thing. He's a big star. Yeah. I mean, it can be done.
Yeah.
I mean, but
can everybody do that though? Can everybody own up and
you got to be a pretty good talker.
Yeah,
you got to by admitting it, make yourself look better. And only Chael has that level of convincingness. But you know, I think we're at the point now where they can say whatever they want. And if you feel like buying it, go ahead and buy it. Who are we to tell you otherwise? If you want to, it's someone you like. Like, we love Gil Melendez.
Yeah, love
one
him.
Of our very favorites.
Yep.
Just admire the man.
Yep.
Love the way he fights. Loves what he did in the formative years. So I might actually choose to believe him. But I won't, because logically, what we know to be a truth is that, as Nate Diaz says,
everybody's on steroids.
Yeah.
Everybody was on steroids. And by everybody, I mean 75%,
sure.
69%,
82%. It could be even higher. Exactly, right.
A lot of people.
Were.
So many that young guys would come in and go, two minutes in a new training room. We know people, and ATT was one that came up a long time ago. But it's we're a repeating story told to us by somebody who went in that room and was like, oh, my God, I got to go on steroids immediately. Look at the size of all these guys. And there were other rooms like that. I'm not picking on them. And I'm not picking on anybody. These were the realities of the time. Now, when you go for a reality at the time where two survive, much like in cycling, we all vilify Lance Armstrong, but the top 30 guys or whatever
were all doing the same thing.
And then the guy they found at whatever, number 26 or 33, who was the only guy that seemed like he wasn't, his time was nowhere near. You couldn't possibly compete if you didn't do it. So your lifetime of dedicating yourself to something now comes down to, will you take this or will you not? If you don't, give it up now. Just give it up. So that reality was the reality. And then someone comes along and goes, guys, we got to put a stop to this. Someone's going to get killed. We're going to get sued or whatever. It's bad for your health. Sure. It's just got to stop. When they say it's got to stop, we're living in that window, that two-year window, where you're taking people whose bodies have been using steroids for a long time, and they didn't feel like cheaters because they felt like they had no choice, many of them. Now you're saying you got to stop. If Vitor just stops taking testosterone that he was allowed to take,
he won't be able to get an erection.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
On that note, we're going to take a break. We come back. We're looking ahead to the show in Chicago, Holly Holm and Valentina Shevchenko, and your five-round main event. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram, Dean, and Black with you. We're looking ahead to the show that's going down this weekend at the United Center in Chicago, Illinois. The main event, the former women's bantamweight champion, Holly Holm, looking to rebound from her loss to Miesha Tate as she takes on Valentina Shevchenko, who last lost to the newly crowned women's champion, Amanda Nunes. I would expect when you look at things objectively, what you've seen from Holly Holm, what you've seen of Shevchenko, you must like Holly Holm in this fight.
I do. I like her in almost every fight. You know, Miesha willed her way to get her, and that was cool to see.
Yeah.
It was really impressive, really inspiring to see her do that. But that's a one-off. You know what I mean? Nobody else has got to her at all. And I think this one is interesting for me. It's about philosophy. And it's about how you build a fighter. And it's about tactics and game plans. Because, you know, one of the things we've heard, we'll talk to 20 fighters. And 10 of them will say this. And 10 of them will say this. And this is, you know, I've studied my opponent. I've solved some of the problems. And this is, I don't care what they do. You know, I'm just going to worry about what I
do. It's confusing sometimes.
It is.
He's trying to figure out the philosophies of things.
Both are true.
Yeah.
I mean, if they work, and both are wrong if they fail.
Yeah.
You know, and
But not necessarily.
And they're different for different fighters.
Yeah.
If you're fighting Damian Maia, you have to care about what he does.
Yeah.
You have to.
You have to.
You have to. it's because.
Right.
Not just like, well, I better learn jiu-jitsu in 4 months. You better be good at that. But you better figure out how he gets you down. When you're down, what are your windows to get up? Because if you're just like, I'm going to keep this standing, bro, next thing you know, he's Damian Maia deal. So you must care about what he thinks. And Holly Holm's one of these two. Because if you don't, you'll suddenly be getting eaten up from the outside. And if you didn't have a specific answer to solve her problem of being hard to get to, then you won't get to her.
Yeah.
If you don't get to her, then you're playing kickboxing on the outside. Now, of all the kickboxers in the UFC, women's bantamweight division, this one's probably got a better shot than 99% of them kickboxing from the outside, and she's a southpaw. So she can kickbox from out there. It's just you would hope that you've made a plan to take Holly out of the place she's the most comfortable.
Now, when you look at – I don't know if you've looked at the Amanda Nunes-Shevchenko fight, but Nunes was – playing that outside game in the first round before she put the fight down and she played the top half guard game. She was bouncing around and she would score from distance.
Yeah.
Low kicks, she'd land her jab and her counter, her cross. And Shevchenko was tentative in those spots. Later in the fight, we saw her as soon as she would engage and get close, she would manage to get the clinch and you'd see her throw knees and she'd be very, very aggressive. But she allowed her opponent to move forward. I think in hopes of trying to counter. And then when the fight went to the ground, It seemed like you pointed out that she was too comfortable accepting the fight is going to the ground. I'll get a sweep or I'll submit her from this position. You just feel that Holly Holm's game is one of frustrating you, because we've seen that before. Frustrating Misha, and Misha just kept going. It worked out for Misha. It forced her to do that. Same with Rhonda. She forced Rhonda to get excited. Will she be able to do this against Shevchenko?
Well, she's way better at it than anybody else in that division. And Amanda Nunes and her in that ability to maintain distance, not just Amanda chose to fight her at distance. Holly will force her to be fighting at distance. You have to overcome that. Also, yeah, the willing to engage in whatever spot, that's a newer, that's a younger mentality in your form, as you form as a
fighter.
Well,
because over the years, everybody told us. You have to be good everywhere.
Yeah, you do have to be good everywhere. And no matter how good you are everywhere, you're going to be better somewhere, and they'll be worse somewhere. And if those two things are the same, then you go there. It's, you know, and that isn't just wrestling or jiu-jitsu or boxing. That is positionally on the fence, half guard. There's Josh Barnett moments where you're looking, and he goes to side, and he gets reversed. And then he's inside again later, and he steps back into half guard. Side's supposedly a more dominant position, but within that fight, he discovered half guard, he's pounding the guy. Half guard, he's controlling the guy. He moves to side control. He gets reversed. He ends up in side control, puts himself back in half guard because he's learned the – it's like not just on the ground I'm better. This little crease within the ground where I'm – able to dominate him. So the greats learn within the fight where to be. But when you're first becoming an MMA fighter, from especially some of the specialists, and she wasn't so much a specialist, she was a multidisciplinary specialist. So she's a kickboxer who is a high-level taekwondo fighter. She boxed and she did judo. So it's sort of like, well, I'm already
a mixed martial artist, right?
But if you ask Mike Brown or any of these top full game guys, just knowing a bunch of different things is not the way to do it. And when young people go and start young within the fight, within the game, start to study fighting, they go, well, I got to get my jiu-jitsu up. I got to train my wrestling and I got to train my kickboxing. And I feel like on some level along the evolutionary chain, Shevchenko still thinks her and her coach and the world.
Well, it's worked for her.
Yeah, it has.
Also, Gilbert Melendez taking on Edson Barbosa in the co-featured bout. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we're looking ahead to all the action going down in Chicago this Saturday night with UFC on Fox 20, I believe it is.
Yeah.
Wow, UFC on Fox 20. Don't go anywhere. More Five Rounds today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Coming up this Saturday night, Chicago will play host to UFC on Fox 20. Holly Holm and Valentina Shevchenko in the main event. The co-featured bout, man, it's a good one. Former Strikeforce champion Gilbert Melendez takes on Edson Barbosa. Gil Melendez coming back from that time off because of the drug suspension. How do you expect him to look? I think you and I, we talked about it earlier, big fans of Gilbert Melendez. We know what he brings to the table. He fights hard. He's always in shape. He can take damage. I think this is one of those guys that he's a fighter's fighter.
Yeah. Oh, man. Just like, have you ever seen a boring Gilbert Melendez
fight? No, never.
And like where you couldn't feel his urgency, feel how ferocious he is. Like it's really, to watch these artists, sometimes it's like, you know, you see the guy calmly being technical and then some of them are just emotionally vital, you know? And he's one of those guys. Some of them have changed. Bisping used to be way more emotionally driven within the fight, and now he's become less. And lo and behold, he beats Anderson Silva, and he's the middleweight champion of the world. So we've also seen the guys. So we'll take Cruz, Bisping, two champions. Take Dan Hardy. We haven't seen him fight, but we've seen where his brain is at. These guys who have been spending a lot of time consuming and watching fights and analyzing them and talking about them, they get a different understanding. They get like a third-person understanding. Cruz is the champion. Bisping's the champion. They sit at a desk and talk about fighting in a nice suit. It helps. It really does. And Tyron Woodley's fighting. He's been doing that work.
Yeah.
We met his wife. Remember how smart that woman was?
She watched everything. She consumed everything.
But she was describing technical things within the fight. That was floored.
So needless to say, in the Woodley home, fighting is on all the time.
And she understood it more than 90% of the people we see at press conferences.
Well, because I will tell you, we go on the road, we talk to a lot of fighters, and a lot of the time our producers say, hey, can you get predictions with this, and this fighter? So we'll go and ask them. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I don't watch.
I just watch football.
I just watch football. Exactly. I go to the gym and I train, and that's it. When I leave the gym, I don't even think about fighting.
Or we'll ask about somebody pretty good.
Yeah.
What do you think about Edson Barbosa? Yeah. I don't know who that is.
I literally asked Rory McDonald about Luke Rockhold, and he had no idea.
Amazing. He trains with Weidman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He has trained with Weidman.
At that time. So maybe, now that Luke Rockhold became the middleweight champion, he didn't.
Yeah, now we know.
But at the time, exactly. Yeah. It's like, wow, you don't know who this guy is?
I know. But Mrs. Woodley, I was chatting with her while we were watching fights. I was floored by how much she was understanding.
Saskatoon.
Yeah. And I'm not talking in wow, I couldn't believe it. Like, if you put a suit on her at a desk and I was working with her, I would have been impressed by how much she knew.
Right.
90% of the people that cover fighting there don't know as much as Tyron Woodley's wife.
Yeah, amazing.
So in that household, they understand fighting. So we don't know how much that guy could have grown. And who did we say? Gil. Gil's been doing the same thing. So we don't know. One of the ways when people do go and analyze fighting, a limiting way in my opinion, but it leads to a different way, is they go, and you see this often, people say, tell me about this fight. It's like, well, this guy's wrestling is better. This guy's got better boxing. And this guy's got better volume. And this guy, his takedown defense against the single.
Yeah.
And they just break it down into a whole bunch of categories and say who's better and who's worse.
I will tell you, the casual masses, what you just said there, that's something they can understand.
Sure. And that is good from an entertaining and a educating and a TV or a podcast standpoint. It can be really good because it'll open people up to these ideas. This guy's better on the ground, but if he's on top, this guy's better. The problem with that is, who said?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if why? Because you're a genius? Yeah.
Based on the evidence of what we've seen, and again, because you hear the broadcasters, they're giving analogies. Well, this guy's an NCAA champion and this and this and this. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, well. Yeah.
And those are good touchstones for an audience to – the biggest – and this is what my breakdown on Woodley and Lawler is about this week is really you go in to do a breakdown. And I'm sure an option is, look at Woodley's double leg takedown and look what he does. When he's backed against the fence, he comes exploding out. He'll time you this way. There's a lot you can do. BJJ Scout, who does awesome work, did a breakdown a year or back maybe about how Rory beat Woodley. And I think within that, he pointed out, I don't know what BJJ Scout is. I just know they do great work. And pointed out that when backed up, you have nowhere to go if you're moving towards him, which is great. He'll take it. Right. Now, you can point that out.
Sure.
Which, if you're copying their work, but you don't have to be copying their work to see the same thing. So there – and if you go back to Woodley's body of work, shoots a double leg takedown, and if you're buying into it, he throws an overhand right.
Right.
And if you're buying into that, he shoots a double leg takedown. I mean, that's an old school thing. So you could go and break that down. But if you do, it's been 547 days since anybody has seen this guy fight. 547 days. It was something like
so you don't expect
140 something thousand hours.
Wow.
So think about how much training you can do in, say, 100 days. Somebody said, okay, you're going to have to. So we were talking about doing that Tough Mudder.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which I don't think I'm actually going to do now. No, I'll do it. But it's like 16K and you have to climb all this stuff.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
So when it's brought up in the office, what's the first thought we have? We're like, okay, well, that's 12 weeks
from now.
We
have enough time to get ready
for it. We got to get ready.
Yeah.
How much could anybody watching this in 12 weeks, could you get off your couch and do a Tough Mudder?
Yeah, right.
The answer is yeah. You could, because you improve. In 12 weeks, you improve. This is 70-some weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're telling the audience Tyron Woodley does this, you're just straight up lying. Mm. That's not how Tyron Woodley is. That's who Tyron Woodley was. So the breakdown itself this time when I went to do it wasn't about technically there's this, this, and this. Also, Robbie Lawler is a technically great fighter, and I thought about showing how he uses the left hand versus the left mm-hmm. hand and all that stuff. But the truth is, we don't even know what Tyron Woodley is. If you think you do, you're wrong. You're 100% wrong. He's an entirely different person. And I don't just mean technically. Every cell in your body has changed in that it's gone and been replaced.
Yeah, right.
You literally are a different thing.
Now, the question, though—
And that's my point was that's guilt.
There are times, though, we've seen what you call evolution of certain mm-hmm. fighters. A guy like Roy Nelson, for example. And we saw the evolution, his fight with Derek Lewis, pursuing takedowns. Because mm-hmm. we didn't see that before yeah. from Roy Nelson, because normally he's a slugger. The goal is to go yeah. for the knockout, rub his belly, yeah. get a $50,000 bonus.
Once upon a time, he was a jiu-jitsu. He was
We never really saw, once Roy Nelson became that striker,
yeah.
I think people identified with him, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, I know what puts food on the table. I know what people want yeah. from my seminars. Yeah. They want to see me headhunting. Yeah. They don't really want to see me wrestling anybody. They don't want to see my jiu-jitsu. This is what they want. Is it possible that fighters can get stuck in that mm-hmm. mold of, well, you know what? This is who I am. Sam Alvey, for example, people expect yeah. a certain fighting style from Sam Alvey. For him to get punched in the face, punch you in the face, you can't take his punching yeah. power, yeah. you fall down.
Yeah, and that's a good way for Sam Alvey to make good money. But at some point you change. Like, you have to change. You know, the world, everything changes. The craziest thing to me, and I'm talking about fighting, but I'm talking about everything, is when things become ritualistic that 25 years later, people are making TV exactly the same way they
yeah.
made it.
Yeah.
The world is different. There's the internet now. There's Facebook. You swipe right and somebody shows up at your house and has sex with you. Like, everything has changed. You're not just competing with two other channels. You're competing with the whole yeah. world. And yet you make TV exactly the same. That, to me, is insanity. And it would be the same thing if you still fight like, well, I trained my wrestling with these guys. I trained against the fence like this. You know, I got this thing going. I get my mitts going, you know, with that. If you're training the same way you did, you're in a lot of trouble because the world has changed. Fighting has changed, the way they approach it, the athletes, the thinking, the mindset. It's all changing. Whatever it is you do, you should be in a state of perpetual change and growth. You have to be. You have to be, or the world will pass you by.
Edson Barbosa training with Eddie Alvarez, the new lightweight champion, as well as Frankie Edgar, the former title challenger, former lightweight champion as well. Mark Henry seems yeah. to be the future. Everybody's jumping on board with his philosophies. And that team with Marlon Moraes and Edson Barbosa and all these guys, they're something special.
They are. Now... Aldo has been – so he beat Frankie. My feeling – you know I'm a Mark Henry guy yeah. and a Frankie guy, like big time.
Yeah.
I admire Mark's work and I really – Frankie is
we
one
love
of those
Frankie.
Yeah, he's one of those great fighters. But I feel like they said Aldo will be this and this is the game plan we'll use, and Aldo wasn't this. Aldo has been many things in his life, but for the last – for his UFC run – he pushes forward and he kicks as you back up and he throws his left
because
hook
it
to
worked.
Set up his it worked. They built a style for a particular time. He offers up the single leg and go, and yes, he can pivot and yes, he'll draw and counter. But this fight against Frankie, he backed up for 80% of the fight. He backed up and you prepared for Jose Aldo, the guy who pushes forward. And I'm telling you, I was in a training camp with Sean Tompkins breaking Jose Aldo down. What would that be now? That with the Toronto show at the stadium.
Was
I mean, 2012?
Like 12?
Yeah.
Something like that?
I mean,
yeah.
That's 4 years ago. And since that, watch every single Jose Aldo fight. It was like that, just fine-tuning, which is what Lawler talks about. This is how
yeah.
I fight. I'm going to fine-tune it. And it worked. It worked. And then the world changed a little bit. And suddenly Jose Aldo and his coach are like, actually, you're a genius. You can fight anyway. We may have stayed with this way a little longer than we thought because it was working.
Yeah.
But now all these people are moving their feet. They're moving backwards. They're making people chase. They're intercepting. That's how you got knocked out. Let's do that. Let's do that.
Yeah.
He'll never be expecting that. And he wasn't. And not only did Jose do it, he did it brilliantly. Brilliantly. Better than some yeah. of these guys do it because he is the greatest. And it was easy to forget. Easy to forget that he wasn't. You could become guilty of that very easily because you'd start to go, this style is Jose Aldo. Yeah, he's very good at it, but somebody can beat that style. That style isn't Jose Aldo. That style was Jose Aldo for a few years, 5 years, 6 years. Now Jose Aldo's a whole other thing. And so Gilbert Melendez could be too. And Tyron Woodley could be too.
We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, more of Five Rounds today here on FM. Welcome back to Five Rounds today. We're talking about the show going down in Chicago, Holly Holm and Valentina Shevchenko. On the 23rd, 1 week later, the Phillips Arena in Atlanta, Georgia, plays host to UFC 201. Ruthless Robbie Lawler putting his welterweight title on the line against Tyron Woodley. They both trained together at one point at American Top Team. This is a great card. Wilson Hayes on the card. Matt Brown on the
card. Wilson Hayes was supposed to be fighting Demetrius.
I know. He was supposed to. I'm sure those guys will face each other in the future.
Who's Hayes fighting? Newer
his,
guy.
No, his opponent just was forced to pull out for injury. So they don't have an opponent.
They got weeks, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A couple weeks. Ian McCall, Justin Scoggins on the card. Francisco Rivera, Eric Perez on the card. Rose Namajunas on the card, taking on Carolina Kovalkiewicz. Is John Anik now?
If Anik said it, it's right.
That's right. Yeah. And Jorge Masvidal, Gamebred, taking on Ross Pearson at 170 pounds.
That's so cool.
A solid, solid lineup. But Robbie Lawler, I mean, this guy just seems to be so in the zone. And does that matter? You know, all the things that he's done. You fight Johnny Hendricks and you don't win against Johnny Hendricks, and then you beat Johnny Hendricks and you're losing against Rory McDonald in one of the greatest fights of all time. Robbie Lawler's been in the fire, man, over the last couple of years. Tyron Woodley's been away and Robbie Lawler has dealt with heat. You would have to imagine that is such a huge advantage for Robbie Lawler. Just having all of that experience so close together, where Woodley's been away, as you pointed, for 500 and some odd days.
Yeah, 547 days. So let's assume that he has trained, let's say, his boxing, 450 sessions in that time.
That's
450.
Insane.
You know when you go and you do Muay Thai three times a week for a month?
Yeah.
You're like, wow, I'm just way better. Yeah, my kick has gotten so I'm so much more comfortable.
True.
Imagine that for 18 months with the best coaches in the world. He's training with Duke. Duke's got a dib. Been looking at him different, I'm sure. Duke likes to build guys to their attributes, which is very
It's
proven. Like, that's a proven approach. They're all different, you know. Every athlete's different. So, you know, work to their approach. But Lawler is cool in that, yes, he just has fine-tuned what worked for him, but he doesn't go in, it doesn't seem, with a preconceived idea of how the fight's going to go. He goes in to fight and to perform at
I've been
best.
In every scenario ever in mixed martial arts history. I'm good to go. I know how to fight. I've dealt with strikers and wrestlers and jiu-jitsu guys, and I've spent so much time in the cage.
Yep.
I fought for championships many times before. I'm just going to go out and do the Robbie Lawler thing.
Yeah.
My goal is to knock your head off.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to try to stop that.
Or
I'm going to do whatever.
Put me on the ground.
Exactly.
I won't let you. Yeah. So there was a bunch of stuff. When I was doing the breakdown, as I got into it, it was like minute five. And I realized it was like, I didn't put any technical stuff in. Breakdowns, to me, are showing something different.
Yeah.
I went through a long period of it all being technical, but it doesn't have to be. But there was, as I was doing, I'm like, oh, I wish I could show this. But in the second fight with Hendricks, in the first fight, he was, you know, that old school. Okay, I got to stop the takedown. The second one was, well, if you're going to come in on me, and we haven't been able to stop it before you got in on me. What if I change the position so that not only is it not a takedown threat,
I
but you're
you.
In trouble and I hurt you? Yeah. And think about it as if you go and you're going to do a squat or a deadlift. This is the position. It's an athletic position. Your chest is up. Your back is
strong set. Position.
It's a strong position. Your hips are lower than you, so that it's a strong position. Hendricks, I think it will work here. Hendricks' head was down here, and his butt was up in the air. Now that's the opposite of this position. Literally the opposite. His head was so far down. Where do you go? You've got your butt up in the air. You can't get under to lift. So just through the geometry of the body, is that the right word? Your hips are too high. You can't get under. So you're forced to go down. Now you're flat, and he starts hurting you. He turned. The answer wasn't stop the takedown. The answer was drive the head to the mat. Commit to that straight arm. Duho Choi was playing at some of that game. It's just science. It's leverage. You know, it's simple machines. So all of it's like this guy's going to come in and try to take me down. So when he does, I'm going to make this terrible for him. And Hendricks just kept doing it and doing it. That'll be the plan with Woodley, I'm sure.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, things keep rolling as Nathan Diaz takes on Conor McGregor, UFC 202, coming faster than we all think on this edition of 5 Minutes. Welcome back to 5 Rounds today. We're chatting about everything that's going on in the combat sports world. Talked about Bellator, talked about Brock Lesnar, the returning Gilbert Melendez, Robbie Lawler, Tyron Woodley. I think the big fight that everybody's talking about, we love Lawler and Woodley. We're very excited about that fight. But I think the next big spectacle, UFC 202 going down August 20th at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, same place that UFC 200 went down. The main event, Nathan Diaz, Conor McGregor. Solid card, though. Rumble Johnson, Glover Teixeira, Carlos Condit, Damian Maia, Neil Magny, Lorenz Larkin, Donald Cerrone, Rick Story, Cody Garbrandt, Takeo Mizugaki, Sean Strickland, Tim Means. Sensational night of combat. Nathan Diaz, Conor McGregor. What do you expect to go down in this highly anticipated rematch?
It's going to be cool.
Is Conor winning? You feel that he's going to win. People are like,
he's in play. He's in play to win.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it depends. Have we learned anything when we said, oh, man, Bisping's got no chance. Robin Black, why are you telling us lies that he's got a chance? And I'm like, you know, dude, did you see the first fight? You know, like, did we learn anything from seeing this happen?
Yeah.
You know, and so the first fight, it's also interesting because people passionately love and hate these guys.
Yeah.
Actually, not very many people hate Nate Diaz.
Yeah,
Nate Diaz is awesome.
Yeah, he is awesome.
But many people love Conor McGregor. Many people hate him. So that passion, we talked about that at the beginning of the show, that conflicting passion gets people all wound up. And sometimes your emotion doesn't allow you to look at it logically.
Yeah.
But what I expect is McGregor will fight different. And, you know, round one went really well, but I don't think even it'll look like that. Because the mindset was terrible, and Diaz's mindset was stellar. Also, you go back and you look, Diaz was rolling really nice with those punches.
He's going to be on point with that.
Yeah, he really is. Can McGregor win? 100% he can win. Do I expect McGregor to fight different? 100% I do. But would I be surprised if Nate Diaz won? No, I would not. Because the up and down of this, the greats will win and the greats will lose, and they'll go through moments where they're better than they've ever been. Nate Diaz went into that fight coming off the best performance he's had against Michael Johnson. Then he had a brilliant one. Expect him to be awesome again. It's going to be super fun.
That is another show in the books. In the future, in the coming weeks, we'll take a closer look at UFC 202. Too many great fights on that card to ignore. On behalf of Robin Black, her producer Chase Kaiser, I'm John Ramdean. We want to thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys next time on 5 Rounds Today.